So good morning again. We are now on record. And I'm going to go to the slides. So let me share. Okay, just a moment. I have a problem with sharing the slides. There's also a question, so let's do an order. Can we have some classes to solve the lists or something like that? We can make this. I mean, the interaction was all by email. Many of you sent me emails. I have responded as good as I can. Many of you have sent me like previews of the exercise lists. Like, look, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Can you comment on that? I prefer a specific. Well, most of you had specific questions. So I have a problem doing that. I don't understand this, and so on. I will try to do this. But if you want, we can also have at, well, next week, at least at the same time. So that would be, what is it, Tuesday, Thursday, 10:30. We could have practice sessions. So I would be just sitting here being the TA for you. If this, I understand from that would be interesting. So, okay, here's what I'm going to do. So next Tuesday and Thursday, I just will be here at 10:30 for answering questions. Okay, I won't prepare anything. I won't maybe have a small comments on admin stuff at the beginning, or Alvo will join us and say something on the beginning. But there will be my kind of 5 minutes of, or 10 minutes of admin stuff, and the rest I'm here to interact with you, to show you stuff, to answer your questions, or to give hints to the exercises. So if you want to do that, okay, then please join the session. But please make sure also, I mean, I had some sessions with some other groups, and sometimes there are very few people, and I won't sit for 100 minutes if there's nobody coming up. So if you want to do that, then enter earlier, so like 10:30, 10:40, so I can see if there's something, and then whenever the question ends, I can finish the session. So don't expect me to sit here at 12 if from 10:30 to 12 nobody showed up. Okay, or just give me send me an email if you want to do something. We can also do if you think that's needed. I want any special explanation. You can always send me an email, or we could meet actually individually. So just like you're coming over to my room. Usually in face-to-face classes, sometimes people come with their stuff to my room and ask me things. So you could do this also. Okay. So yeah. So for the record, now next Tuesday, Thursday, 10:30 until as long as there is interest, I will be there to answer these questions. Okay. I have to. Okay, I have to now change. So I'm the host now, and I hopefully can now share my screen. Yes, I can. Good. So let's head over to the slides. Yes, that's that. So we should be seeing the slides now. Actually, we have a look at the book at Kleinberg Tadusch, as always. So, well, again, obviously, we are in the part on dynamic programming, and I will be looking at sequence alignment and sequence alignment in linear space via divide and conquer. So we have exclusively, basically, a look on this one today. That's so the third lecture on dynamic programming. And in C, then overall, just looking at this, we have been covering, that was, I think, the second lecture. I have given an intro in the first lecture, and in the first lecture there were what was it? Also subset sums and knapsacks. We had, instead of RNA, secondary structure, a matrix multiplication here, and we had a TSP, which is a different form of dynamic programming recurrence. So we have a reasonable coverage of that. I mean, the principles of dynamic programming, obviously, but also in the lecture when we have a reasonable coverage of that. But it's I mean, the book has good stuff, and it pays off. Okay, I've been emphasizing this for several times, but I want to do it again. Dynamic programming is extremely useful. It's the most useful technique you could learn, and it pays really off to invest into that. Okay, you're looking in the lectures, reading the book, like in slowly. In an appreciative manner. It's just not just to get it. Try to understand everything very slow. Take your time. That will pay off, I think. Okay. So let's without further ado look into that. Okay, so the plan is rather easy. We have a look at minimum cost sequence alignment. We then head over to so we will have a standard program for minimum cost sequence alignment. So the problem. The main ideas we'll cover that with the dynamic programming approach, and then we see how we can do space saving. And there is a net map, maybe this time. Okay. Min cost sequence alignment. What's that? That's rather easy. I mean, we have two sequences of characters over some alphabet sigma. Here, so there's a sequence X, which has characters X1 to XN, and a Y, which is Y1 to YM. Note that these two guys are different, so the sequences not necessarily have the same length. And what you want to do is find an alignment of these guys. So that's a, well, that's the definition here, a non-crossing matching of X's to Y's characters at minimal cost. No, actually, that's okay. Let's look at alignment first, right? So I can maybe make a copy with that with some more concrete stuff. So X has seven characters, maybe, and Y has, I don't know, 25 or six, I don't know, whatever, five. And you can see this as a bipartite graph if you want. Right. This would be the first set of vertices. This would be the second set of vertices, and potentially you have all the edges here. That's what matching characters mean. It's a complete bipartite graph, and you want a matching. So you want match this guy to that guy, and this guy maybe to that guy, and this guy to that guy, and this guy to that guy. That's a matching. But what you don't want is crossings. That's also a matching in the bipartite graph, but well, we have a crossing here, and I don't want it. So that's forbidden. So it should be like this. That's what meant here by non-crossing matchings of X's to Y's characters. So a bipartite graph over X and Y with parts X and Y, you make a matching, and then you find the minimum matching, but in a non-crossing manner. That makes the problem much easier. Yeah, easy, not by very much, but easy. I mean, the context is, I think, in the book Inclined by Coverage, it's made clear. I didn't say this in the videos, but the context obviously is bioinformatics. When you have genetic sequences, so you maybe think about the alphabet being AGTC, right? So you have just whatever, the 3.1 billion base pairs. Or a sequence, the character sequence of 3.1 billion characters, which is the human genome, for example, or I don't know, the 60K mitochondrial DNA if in a human genome or something like that, and you want to match this to some other genetic sequence. And while these sequences have tiny mutations, they have sometimes tiny edits, so it's missing a part or there has been edited apart, so it doesn't match up. And what you want is to make that match of a minimal cost, because that supposedly makes it as close as possible. And it also can represent a kind of a phylogenetic distance between the sequences. Okay, although I'm going here a bit out of my bounds. But I mean, the applications are rather obvious of such a problem. Okay. Talking about cost, when you come up with a matching, what does it cost? I mean, there are a couple of unmatched characters, just like pick another color here, so Y2 or X3 or X4, and all these guys over here. These unmatched characters are nominally matched to a blank, to a gap in the other sequence, so like this. And they have a gap cost delta. That costs, not matching a character costs delta. Okay. I see here, a couple of questions come up. Can we have some, can a character in a sequence be matched to multiple characters in the other? No. A matching is a one-on-one mapping, if you want. Okay. So each character is matched to at most one other. Either one or none. Like these two. Okay. So you cannot, there's no multiple matching. Would be possible, but from the point of view of genetic sequences, that's probably wouldn't make, that's cool. Maybe I could put this as an exercise for the dynamic programming part, find a solution to that problem. Possible? Could think about this as an exercise. Because if you maintain the non-crossing condition, but allow multiple matches, it may be possible. Interesting. Okay. Exercise. So let me put this down. Exercise. Maybe it comes up. Exercise. Solve the problem with multiple matchings, but still non-crossing. But still in a non-crossing way. So that would be a nice exercise to think about if you. Sure, understood. I mean, I think it can be done. I would immediately bet 100 reais that it could be done. So if you see the thing working and it's clear to you, you should be able to see that after looking at this stuff that it cannot do. So let me talk quickly about cost. I've been saying, okay, the gaps cost delta. So there would be a cost of delta for each of these unmatched guys. And now when you really match two characters like these, there's a cost alpha, which depends on the characters. So alpha x1, y1 here, over here. That's a matching cost. It's over here. Matching characters C and D costs alpha CD. So you have, if you think about then genetic sequences, what you have here, the alpha is AGTC, right? And you have a matrix of costs. Normally, what happens is matching A to A and G to D and C to C costs nothing, because that's the perfect match, okay. And then it depends on what cost you want to assume here. So that would be DNA. You could also do it with RNA, and you have this other chapter in Kleinberg Tadosh, which there are more bases for the RNA for that. And then you have some kind of what's the evolutionary cost of flipping an A to a G? Something like that. What's the probability that happens, for example? Marcio, about the exercise in the sense of repetitive portions of the genomic cis? No, I think I interpreted at least Jose's suggestion like that. Let me put this down again. X1, X2, X3, X4, X5, X6, and maybe 5 Ys over here. 2, 3, 4, and 5. Okay. And I said, hey, we want to match up characters like this and it has to be non-crossing. And Jose has asked, hey, can I match one character to two on the other side? And I said, no. So you couldn't do that. But I could allow that. Okay. That is still non-crossing. Okay, so I don't want to see that, obviously. It's still non-crossing, but it's many to one match. Or many to many match, I think. Well, a many to many match would be, I don't know. Yeah, it could be something like that, right? And something like that. So this guy is matched to two on the other side, and this guy is matched to the other side also, etc. but still non-crossing. So everything of that would be possible. Even if you want to stretch a little bit like this also. Okay. That would be the problem. A many to one non-crossing match. Yeah, outside here, yeah, it could make sense. Could make sense. That's the kind, I mean, that's a very good point, just because, I mean, I probably have emphasized this many times. You don't get out of this lectures knowing how to make a minimum cost sequence alignment, because your master and PhD maybe does not need a minimum cost sequence alignment. So the concrete knowledge of how to do a minimum cost sequence alignment in that sense over here is next to useless. Also, there are libraries which have this algorithm implemented already. So that would be just for fun if you want to implement it again. And there are other libraries, and there are BLAST and so on and so forth. There are many techniques. What you get from these lectures is a sense of what dynamic programming can do and how to think about it. And you should then walk to such a problem and say, oh, I can do this by dynamic programming immediately. And then you go ahead and write down the recurrence. That's what you take from these lectures. You have to absorb the principles, and you have to be able, like, just it's in your toolbox. Whenever a sort of dynamic programming hammer is in your toolbox, and whenever you see a nail, just say it's dynamic programming. That's the idea. So that's actually a good point. These variations, they could make sense out of Elsevier informatics, and you may stumble about such a problem. You should say then later, yeah, I can do this by the problem, or completely different problems. Variations of subsystem of knapsack, variations of driving statement, variations of matrix multiplications. Maintain these patterns and the way we have solved them in your mind, and try to apply them whenever you can. So whenever you see a problem in the wild you have never seen, you say, hey, let me think about that 5 minutes. Could I apply dynamic programming? That's a good exercise. So let's stop here for a second. Maybe imagine a sounds lyrics. Yeah, probably, maybe. I mean, everything which you can maybe compare sequencing. Such stuff comes also up in fuzzy searches, right? You're searching in the database for a name. So you're searching for Marcus Ritt, but it's written Marcus Pitt or something like that. And you want a close match. So you want a name that closely matches to the query or something like that, but it can have deletions or insertions or whatever, then you could use something like that. And maybe you want a many-to-one match or not. It depends on what makes sense in your domain. Okay. let's pause here another second. Maybe you give me a yes. Are you good with the problem? Does it make sense? Costs, alignments. Okay, I see some yeses here. Okay, and what else? Okay. Yeah, so seems to make sense at the moment. So let's look what we do. Oh, okay, in the video I had more examples, but we have been discussing this long. So post and stop could match it like this. Okay, again. And now I draw it nicely aligned. So this guy here is 4 delta plus the cost for S and S, and plus the cost for T and T, which supposedly is 0. So it costs 4 delta. But you could make it in a different manner, right? Make stop and post, for example, and then it has 6 delta cost. And so on. That would be a concrete example of the way you measure that. That's just a lot. You always have the empty matching. And the empty matching would be like, okay, put their post and do nothing. So empty. And then you put stop over here and empty. and this would cost n plus m times delta. So you have n plus m times delta gap costs. So n plus m gaps, that's always possible. So that's the trivial baseline solution that gives you an upper bound. What is an upper bound? Would be n plus m times delta. You can see immediately that it has always a solution, just match nothing to nothing. Okay. Well, main idea, seeing this in the video, you probably get used to the approach, but let me repeat the thing. So you look at that problem and you think, well, what are the subproblems? How could I tackle this problem? How could I chop off a small bit? How could I solve a small local decision, decide locally something that makes progress? So if I would have the optimal local decision in the first step, I could break the problem down into a smaller subproblem and then repeat the same thing. And in this case, I think it's very natural to look at, for example, the last two characters. So we're looking at xn and ym, and we just conclude what must happen. So we have xn here and ym is over here, and that's all the rest of the sequence. And well, they can be matched. That's okay. And then you have to find a non-crossing matching in the rest. So if they're matched, you have a cost of alpha x and x ym for matching them. And the subproblems, the subproblem is to find a minimum cost alignment of the prefixes over here. So it's just x from 1 to n minus 1 and y from 1 to m minus 1. The other case could be, and let me put this in a different manner as in the video, it could still be that xn is matched to someone, this guy here. And there's a couple of y's here and there. Now, could ym be matched in this case? And the answer is no. Okay, because ym, if it's matched at the same time, it must be matched to some xn minus 1 to 1. But that would be crossing. Can't be. So if xn is matched or not, it could be also free, then ym must be free. So xn is matched or not. I should put here really is matched or not. Well, because if it's matched, ym must be free. But it could also be that ym is free and xn is also free. But what we're going to do is, in this case, we set ym free. So we look at prefixes 1 to n and 1 to m minus 1. And that would cost delta, because y is free, so it has an empty match. So the subproblem here is, to roll back here a little bit, it's really just like this. Xn remains, and we have these prefixes, and ym is just matched to a blank. That could be, it's not matched. It's another way of putting it. In the video, I put just, okay, ym is not matched. Can be. And then there's a symmetric case, that is ym is matched or not, but then xn, or we assume then xn is free, and this also costs delta, or xn would be free, and ym may or may not be matched, so the subproblem are these prefixes here, and then you get, okay, the prefix from 1 to n minus 1, and from y to. And that's all that can happen. That's the important way of checking that. So we said if we took an optimal local decision about xn and ym, we get smaller subproblems. And then we, since we don't know what's best, are they matched or are they not, in which of these three cases will happen, we just check them all. And then we take the best one, the one of minimal cost. That's the idea. And we can see then subproblems of prefixes of the character sequence. And we have these three cases. Okay. And that's the main idea. So if you wanted to that repeated matching, that multiple matching, solve that multiple matching problem, you sit down here at this slide and think, how does generalize if Xn, for example, can be matched to multiple other characters, and see what you can get out of that. Okay. Let me clear up here. Can I do this? Oh, I can't. Why? Oh, that's interesting. Because I'm not the host anymore, supposedly. Okay. yeah, that's a strange technical problem coming up in the last session. I could not share the slides without making my pad the host, so I cannot clear the mux. But well, okay, anyway, is the main idea clear? Okay, I see. Okay, it's disappearing, coming up again. Good. Yes, it seems to. Any question? Yes, in the chat. Okay, so that seems that, because now comes what I call the almost what I call the Fibonacci playbook, but it has a twist this time. So you should be getting used to, oh, that gives us a recursion. And now I have identified the subproblems. The subproblems are costs of best alignments of x1 to I and y1 to j. So prefixes starting from the first character going to I in the x case and j in the y case. And I call that optimal cost aij. So what I want is a nm. The cost of the best alignment for x1 to n and y1 to m. That's all we have here. And based on what we have said on the previous slide, there are three cases in general. So as long as I and j is more than zero, so zero would be my base case, we have three possibilities. Either you pay, that's not looking as good as I wanted. So either you pay a alpha cost for matching xi and yj, and then you go to the prefixes I minus one, j minus one. So I and j have been consumed, they have been chopped off the end of the sequence. Or xi is free, then you pay delta for that and xi is gone, but yj part remains. Or you say, okay, yj is free, then it's chopped off, the y sequence has one less character, but the x sequence is the same. So that's delta plus the optimal cost for that subproblem, delta plus the optimal cost for that subproblem, or delta plus the or alpha actually, and the cost for that subproblem. That's it. That's the main recursion. Okay. You have a base case. If the product of ij is zero, that means I is zero and j could be positive, or I could be positive and j could be zero, or even both could be zero, right? That summarizes all these cases over there. And then you just pay delta I plus j, because one sequence is zero and the other has some characters, you cannot do anything. So you match these characters to gaps, and each gap costs delta. So that's the base case, very, very briefly. Okay. And that's it. You have a dynamic programming. A dynamic programming formulation of that problem. And then you do whatever you do. So you make a recursive implementation with memoization. You maybe check the dependencies. Let's do that quickly. So matrix A is over here. You have the I's and the J's, and they range from 0, 1, 2, up to m in this case, and 0, 1, 2, down to n in this case, and cell ij depends on cell I minus 1 j I j minus 1 and I minus 1 j minus 1. The costs here are, we put this in another color, delta and alpha. Oh, that will be messy. So alpha x I y j, and this one over here, and that's it. So you can see that matrix can be filled in from bottom up, line by line. So you first from top down. Sorry, you first fill, put it in the same color here. You first fill the first line and column. That's 0 delta, 2 delta, 3 delta, and so on. Delta, 2 delta, 3 delta. Okay. And then you can, by the dependencies here, can emphasize this in another color, by the dependencies here, then you have the previous line, you can fill the next line from top to bottom. So the algorithm is extremely simple. Okay, it's just like, okay, you say a zero j is delta j for j in 0 to n, and a what's that, I zero equals delta I for I ranging from 0 to n, and then it will 4 over all the lines, so for I equals 1, 2 down to n, and then you do 4 over the columns for j equals 1, 2 up to n. Then you plug in our recurrence. So you just write down aij equals alpha xi yj plus ai minus 1 j minus 1 or delta a minus 1 j or delta aj minus 1. And you minimize over that. That's it. Here's the code. 5 lines. Or 6. 5. That's all. What does it cost? What's time and space complexity of that stuff? Well, let's start with space complexity. What do I have to store? And then time complexity. What does it cost to do that stuff? Nm time, n squared space. No, nm space. Okay. Space n. Okay. Space nm. Yeah. Depends maybe on what you were thinking, Faisal. And space too, and time too. Yeah. So. Most of you agree on that. Yeah, you should be able to see that. Rather, this should also be pseudo-polynomial time, correct? No, that's not pseudo-polynomial time. So one after the other. So space complexity, the matrix A. Okay, oops. Sorry, the matrix, and that A has ranges from roughly n plus one. No, exactly n plus one and n plus one cells. So 0 to n and 0 to n. So this, the product of these two guys is the number of entries in the table, and that is order nm. So that gives you order of nm space complexity. Okay. And the time complexity is just the time for filling an entry. The same thing we have been discussing all three lectures. So the cost for this stuff here is order of one. So that's time per entry or cell in the matrix, because it's just a couple of sums and a minimization. And that means this time complexity is also order nm. That's what happened. the same scheme as always. I think someone has been even sending email. Dynamic programming is very simple in this manner. Size of the table is space complexity, if you don't have any additional data structures, obviously. Size of the table times complexity for filling a table entry is the time complexity. So that's that. I will come back to that in a second. There's a very little twist, but then Graham is asking, this should also be to the point number time, and the answer is no, that's not. Because in this case, we'll look at the problem. Okay, the size of the input here is n plus m. And so it even may have an additional sigma squared for the alpha table, but that's not important in this case. So the size of the input is really n plus m. So the complexity that we have here, space and time complexity, is indeed polynomial in the size of the input. It's just if you want nm, if you want to, so to, I have to use another variable. So k equals n plus m is the size of the input. And you measure complexity in the size of the input. So nm would be certainly less than n plus m times n plus m. And that's certainly less than k squared. Okay. So you have an order of k squared if the size of the input is k. That's polynomial in the size of the input. And then that's the. Let me give you another example. I didn't give that example. That confuses people. Maybe Alvar comes up with that. Good. I give you a very simple algorithm here. Input n. It's a natural number. And then I do it for ring. For I equals 1 to n. I don't know. Print high or something like that. It doesn't matter. It's the order of one operation here. So what's the complexity of that algorithm? Time complexity. And is it polynomial or pseudo polynomial? I want to say order of n, and you did. And that's okay. It's order of n. It's order of n. Sometimes, right? If I'm building like questions like that, let me show you something you hesitate to answer because, there must be a hidden catch or something. But it's no catch. It's a simple for loop from 1 to n, and each iteration costs all of 1, so it costs all of n. So don't get don't let me confuse you in this case. But the twist comes now. This algorithm is not polynomial. It's not polynomial in the size of the input. Even it looks like it's pseudo polynomial. And now you can see the difference because what's the input size for a number n? Or input size, what's the real input size? Here's the input. But what's the input size? Let's call the input size k again, as before. The input size is log 2n, because you need only log 2n bits to write down that number in a usual, whatever, machine. Okay. So what's order of n expressed as a function of the input size? Oh, that's here, right? K is log n, so n is 2 to the k. So it costs 2 to the k steps in the size of the input. That's the reason why it's not polynomial. You have only, if you give you a 64-bit machine, The input is only 64 bits, but I make you count from 0 to 2 to the 64 minus 1. That takes a long time as a function of the size of the input. And I give you, if I give you 200 bits as the input, you never stop counting. That takes more time than we had in the universe probably to do that. So it grows exponentially. And that's the reason why this guy here is pseudo-polynomial, because the input is much shorter. Now, if I gave you in the input a list of numbers, x1, x2, to xn, then each number takes at least one bit. So then the input size would be really in the order of n, and that guy is polynomial. But that's, I mean, in this case, I don't need the numbers, so that would be just a joke. But if you blow up the input accordingly, then the complexity goes down. Okay. Does it make sense? Okay, maybe. So you can confront Alvaro with that. I think he has to talk about polynomial NP and that stuff. Marcio, the idea is you always we measure. Maybe let me put this down here again. Complexity in time is usually we say n is the input size, and then it's f of n, which would be order of something. You measure the time as a function of the input size. That's what you do. On the right hand side, the input is n, and therefore I take order of n steps because it has a loop over n. But the input size is only log 2 n bits. Okay, if I give you the number, I don't know, 1023, these are 10 bits, 10 ones. Does it make sense? Could do it like this, okay, maybe. Input. Size, but number of steps. Okay, and then we say that the input is one, the size is one bit, and the number of steps is one. Number of iterations of the loop. If I give you three, the size is, size is two. Yeah, these are the input. Is in binary is 1, is 1, 1. The number of steps, however, are 3 now. If I give you an input 7, that's in binary 1, 1, 1. So the size of the input is 3. The number of steps is obviously 7. I give you input 15, that's 4 ones. The size of the input is 4. The number of steps is 15. And the function is size and number of steps as a function of the size. Okay. And now you can see what happens. This here is for size k, 2 to the k minus 1. And that's the complexity. So f of k is 2 to the k minus 1. Minus 1. Okay. Because we measure the time it takes as a function of the size of the input, not of the volume of the input. Well, okay, maybe let it percolate a little bit. Take that thing and confront Alvaro with that again. It's very simple. There's another way, but I want to explain that, but it's maybe easy to see.
a pseudo-polynomial. I'll just write it down and you can think about it and ask Alvaro about it, okay? An algorithm is pseudo-polynomial, pseudo-poly, if it were poly for a unary encoding of the input. Unary encoding of the input. That's another way of saying it. Because the problem here is the binary encoding, right? The input is 15, but the encoding is binary, so it's only 4 bits. And that makes it exponential. If I would write down 15, like they did before inventing the numbers, and 7 like that, and there's like 3 and there's like 1, that's a unary encoding. And now it gets polynomial. So complexity depends on encoding size, if you want. Well, okay, I'm going back to the main track. Okay, we have this. We have time and space complexity of order n m. But there was still a slight twist. I could reduce the complexity, space complexity, to order of m. Because we have seen in the propagation of the matrix that I'm propagating here from top to the bottom, line by line. So I need to maintain only 2 lines here. 2 lines are sufficient. And since this is m columns, 2 lines, so I have order of m space. Okay, you could propagate that, you get the final line here, and you get out that cell. That's the cell NM, which has the volume of the minimum sequence alignment. But if you do this, you will lose the optimal solution. But you have the volume, because the volume is down here. That's the volume of the optimal solution. But you lose the optimal solution because you cannot trace back the path through that matrix to see which decisions have been taken. Okay. And that's the problem we're going to solve next. It's possible to do it in order of m, but without losing the optimal solution. For this, you have to work hard. So you can reduce the space, and that's very important. I mentioned this in the video. I think if you think about 3 billion, n equals 3 billion and m equals 3 billion, so that would be 10 to the 9 squared. The matrix has like 10 to the 18 entries, and that's a huge mass. It doesn't fit in memory. But if you have 3 billion, that's kind of 3 gig entries that will possibly fit. So that makes a difference between can do it or can't. Before we have a look at that, so there's the best time of problems to understand the proof 619 and 620 from the book chapter 66. Okay, let me have a, okay, that's, yeah. Okay, give me 10 seconds to have a look at this. Oh. That sequence alignment. Okay. So that would be 690 and 620 or chapter 66, not like this, 690, 20. A quick look. If it fits in, I will comment on that. Otherwise, I can do it at the end if you want. 619, the length of the shortest corner pass that passes through IJ is 690. Oh, I will come to that. Yeah. We will come to that. We're not there yet. Okay. What they are, I think, talking about here. Yeah, this is about combining the forward and the backward formulations.
Okay, and I will come to that in a second. Okay, and then you may be you may ask the question. So, at the moment, I just pointed out if you keep propagating lines only from top to the bottom, you can reduce the space, maintaining two lines as a sliding window, but then you don't have the solution anymore. You have only the volume. So you make a sequence alignment, and they say, well, the minimum cost sequence alignment has volume 13. And you say, yeah, what is it? Give it to me. Give me the matching. And you say, I can't. I've thrown away the matrix. I cannot find a path anymore in the matrix. And that's, well, that's suboptimal, at least. If you are interested only in volume, you're good. Otherwise, not. So we have to work harder to reduce space to order of M. And at the same time, be able to extract the sequence. Okay, that's the idea. What we're going to do here. For this, we need a forward DP, which is at this point it seems just like an easy exercise. Hopefully, easy exercise. I call this a backward DP here because I'm going from the end of the sequences xn and ym to the front. Okay, it is easy to see. And if I would say to you without showing, that should be an easy exercise for you. We can also do it in a forward manner. Just look at x1 and y1, and they're either matched or they're not. And then x1 is free or x or y1 is free. So in this case, you go from the start to the end. Keep making the same trichotomy. So either matched or one goes a step forward or the other goes a step forward. That's a trichotomy. And if they are matched, you pay an alpha. Otherwise, you pay a delta or a delta. That's all there is. And the subproblems are now suffixes, starting from the ith character n x and the jth character n y, going to the end. Same logic applied in the other way, the other way around. I did this with weighted interval scheduling also, and I made a short comment on that. The weighted interval scheduling in the book. I think is from this backward, and the weighted interval scheduling in the video is forward. Same thing. So if you look at this, I will create another recurrence Rij. It's the best cost of the suffixes from I to N and J to M. The smallest cost of the smallest cost of an alignment for these two guys. What I really want then is R11. I want the cost of the best alignment of the whole sequences, and that would be A and M. That's the same by definition. And how does it work? Well, here's the recurrence. Rij is just doesn't work. Rij is just either you match xi and yj and you go one step to the suffix, or you skip I, pay delta, j remains the same, or you skip x, yj, pay delta, and I remains at the same position. So that works for all i's from 1 to, oh, that's an error over here, 1 to n, and j from 1 to m. And if n plus 1 minus I and n plus 1 minus j equals, that's not on the slide, 0. So if anyone hits, if I is n plus one, or if j is n plus one, or both, then you'd pay, as before, just the gap cost. So that would be delta times size of the remaining x sequence or size of the remaining y sequence. Okay, and that should be a plus, by the way. So it has a few bucks over here. So that gives you n plus m just by substitution plus 2 minus I minus j times delta. That's the same written down in a backward, in a forward manner. Okay. And to do the same stuff, all the same. Look at the matrix. Running on columns instead of rows, or bottom up instead of top down. That's running on we're still running on rows in this. You could do it on columns too, but that's we can do it on rows. It's bottom up. Yes, it's bottom up.
So you look at the matrix R, it's just sketch very quickly. It has some entries I and J, and it starts now from 1 and goes down to n plus 1, and 1, 2, and goes down to m plus 1, because we have this overhang element. So the base case is this, and you have your 0 delta. Yes, 0 delta, 2 delta, delta, and so on, and delta, 2 delta, and so on. Okay, up to, so that would be a kind of n delta and m delta over here. That's the base case. And a generic cell depends now on ij, depends on I plus 1, ij plus 1, or I plus 1j, or I plus 1j plus 1. So the dependencies, you know, the color here, are to the right, to the diagonal, bottom right, and to below. So yes, you can propagate the whole stuff line by line again, but upwards, bottom up. Just to make, let me open the parentheses here, but it's not important. I mean, I said it's line by line. It could be also column by column, right? If you look, the dependencies are to the lower right. So I could take columns and propagate columns from the right to the left. And in our other case, I could have taken columns and propagated columns from the left to the right. That's also possible. Doesn't matter. Because you can transpose the matrix. I mean, instead of propagating columns, you just flip X and Y, and then you're propagating lines. So you, in this problem specifically, because it's symmetric, you only ever have to talk about propagating columns or lines. And I'm talking about lines. And also over here, I gonna reduce the space to order of m. I could also reduce it to order of n by propagating columns, but I just will assume that m is less than n. So the y sequence is shorter. If that's not the case, you just switch them. So x is y and y is x. And then the y sequence is shorter. So without loss of generality, we can assume that the y sequence is shorter. And then we want to reduce the space to order of m. That means we want to propagate lines, not columns, because it's small. Okay. That closes this additional comment. So it could be both. So we have two ways of doing that. It could be forward or it could be backward. Well, I have been saying that, yeah, we have been looking at that. Okay, both take space nm time nm2. I assume that m is less than n, so the space could be reduced to order of m, but we lose the solution. That is the state of the discussion. And now we're gonna make a step forward, and now we're gonna come to what Climatage is also explaining in the book. And the main problem now is how to recover a solution. Okay, in saying that, very quickly sketch again. If you propagate it, say from bottom up, line by line, with a window of size 2, then you get up here and you get the element 1, 1, that would be the R recursion, and you have it, and you have in the cache then only these two lines. So you don't know how to find your way diagonal or horizontal, or diagonal or horizontal, or only diagonal or only horizontal through the matrix. And this encodes decisions made to match or not. And so you lose the solution. That's the problem. So the main problem is indeed how to recover the solution. I can reduce space, but then I need to know how to reduce the solution, how to find the solution. Okay. the inside, actually, I want to remain on that matrix a little bit more. So I'm going to draw it again. From 1 to m and from 1 to m. I will do a little bit different this time because I want to put two bordering lines and columns over here. So it would be 1 to m and 1 to m. And I also want to include m plus 1 and 0 on both sides, m plus 1 and 0. Okay. So I have been saying that for a generic cell, we have, let me put it another way. We have been saying that the optimal solution we want to have is encoded by a path from 1, 1 to nm. All right, I'm going to do this in another color. It's actually a path from 0, 0 somewhere to goes down diagonal right, down diagonal right to up to nm. So that's the optimal solution. It's represented by such a path. And the main point is the optimal solution is a shortest path. It's a shortest path from 0, 0 to n plus 1. It depends. I will use, I'm going to use the forward and the backward formulation at the same time. That's the reason why I've been including 0 and n plus 1 and n plus 1 at the same time. So I can do them all. So I'm extending both to the domain from 0 to n plus 1 and 0 to n plus 1 to be able to code for both. What we are really talking about is such a cell over here, any cell over here. It depends on other cells, and the costs were delta, some alpha, and some delta. Let me put this in another column too. Delta, and some alpha over here. These were the dependencies for the A recurrence. For the R recurrence, the dependency actually goes to the down right. Okay, to the right and down. And then for the R recurrence, you have also costs delta, and some alpha over here. So what you can actually see, and both are computing shortest path. It's only that, since the dependency is from this point of view over here, A computes a shortest path from ij to 0, 0. And R computes a shortest path from ij to n plus 1. And both actually can be seen as working then, so the direction of these edges here is only an artifact of going forward or backward. Actually, I have these edges, I can be seen in an undirected manner. So you have an undirected graph where each cell is a vertex, and between neighboring cells with that pattern here, you have costs of delta, alpha, delta, delta, alpha, delta. So you're finding actually a shortest path in an undirected graph. and A finds it going from ij to 0, 0. So A's direction is like this, and R finds it from ij to n+1, n+1. So it goes in this direction. But since the graph is essentially undirected, it doesn't matter. The shortest path is the same. And the value of the shortest path is the same. Okay. Does that make sense? Maybe. Maybe you flag this over there again, even if I cannot clear the flags. Yeah. It's just another way of looking at the problem. It's just essentially the same, but we're now looking in as a graph model. Okay. So, and if you combine this with what you have been saying, if you want to save space, you keep propagating from top to the bottom or from bottom to the top, and you have a sliding window of two lines, and then you cannot find the path anymore. That's the problem. But this gives us an opportunity to find the path. Okay. Because, so if you make the propagation for A, you will end up, so A will end up, oh, sorry, let me use the same color again. A will end up with these two lines here only, because it propagates from top to bottom. And R will end up with these two lines only, because it propagates from bottom to top. And all the middle part of the matrix here, this is missing. And that's why I cannot recover the solution anymore. But the idea of that green path going over here gives the basic idea. That's what you're going to do. Take any middle line here, so roughly here in the middle. Then that shortest path must go through one of these cells in the middle. If you go from 0, 0 to n+1, n+1, you have to go over line roughly n half, you know, floor of n half. There's no way you could get from 0, 0 to n+1, n+1 without crossing that line. But you don't know if it's here or here or here or here or there really, or here or here or here or here or here. You don't know that. But I can identify that cell because we have been saying that A computes the shortest path from ij to 0, 0. That's in this direction, in the red, okay. And R computes the shortest path from a cell ij to n+1, n+1. So what is the cost of a shortest path? And let me call this, I think in the video I used another variable, I call this k now. Okay. K is n half. And you assume that the column here is j. Okay. And we put it here. So I want to see what's the cost of a shortest path from 0, 0 to n+1, n+1, going over this cell, going over kj. That's the question I want to answer. And now shortest path satisfy optimal substructure. If you have a shortest path going from 0, 0 to kj, and then from kj to n+1, n+1, then you have to have a shortest path from 0 to kj and the shortest path from kj to n+1, n+1. If these two segments wouldn't be shortest path, you would get an overall shorter path. That could not be. So the cost of the shortest path from 0, 0 to n plus 1 going over this cell kj is, I'll take some space over here, that's just the cost of a shortest path from 0, 0 to kj plus the cost of a shortest path from kj to n plus 1, m plus 1. Okay. Does that make sense? Let's pause a little bit here for a... That's what shortest paths do. Okay. Now, a shortest path from 0, 0 to kj seems to be, yeah, okay. That's IIJ, IKJ. And this guy here is RKJ. So it's this one, okay. So if I knew the cell where the shortest path goes through, I could compute the shortest path, but I don't know what the cell is. But this is the trick to find the cell. So look at line K. And what of these cells does the shortest path go through? I don't know. I'm gonna find it out. It's the cell that minimizes, so over all the possible columns from 0 to m, you compute AKJ plus RKJ. And the cell that minimizes this expression is the cell where the shortest path goes through. Okay. So this gives us the point. This is the cell or the point where the shortest path, shortest path from 0, 0 to n plus 1 goes through. Okay. And that's enormous progress because we are able now to identify one cell in the shortest path, which is in the middle. That was not possible before. And the cost for doing that is not more than before. We compute A and R. We do this with a space reduced in space MN. But we propagate actually only from the top to the bottom until our window sits here. And we propagate only R from the bottom to the top until our window sits here. So that we have all these volumes that we want in the middle. So the space will be all of M. And the cost will be, actually it's cheaper. It's not order of n times, it could be order of n times n half, but the half one disappears in the order of n. So the time is, actually you have two times order of n m half, from top on the bottom until it meets in the middle. And then you do that minimization over here. That costs you another order of m, it doesn't matter. So, with space order of m and time order of nm, I can find the cell here, that magic cell that goes through the middle. Okay. Let's pause here a little bit again. Does that make sense? It's quite an effort, right? We're doing two dynamic programming tables from top to bottom, bottom to top, and in the middle, we minimize all that stuff. Then I can say the shortest path has to go through this cell over here. That's the main insight. Okay, until now. Good, cool. Well, the rest will be easier because we're just going to do this recursively, but let's have a look here if that makes sense. Yeah, the length of the, so your 619, the length of the shortest corner pair in GXY, but I'm using a different notation. GXY is that graph we have been seeing, right? Every cell is a vertex, and then you have the, they are connected according to the dependency pattern with the costs. And Fij is probably my A or my R. So that's what we have been talking right now. So 619. Okay. And well, what I was saying, let Lij denote the length of the shortest corner path in G with path through Ij. So fix that cell Ij. Clearly, any such path must get from 0 to Ij and from Ij to Mn. Oh, note that I use Mn here. That doesn't matter. You can. It's just a question of how you fix the end. Thus, its length is at least Fij plus Gij, and so we have that it's at least this one. Okay. On the other hand, consider the corner path. Consider minimum path from 0,0 to Ij, followed by minimum length path of this. This path has length Fij and Gij, so we have this is low. Then it follows that it's the same. Okay. Yes. Well, okay. That's a lack of an extended argument that I have been giving for 619. The problem is the second affirmation. This one, on the other hand, I mean, I have been saying, look at the shortest path, right, from the two corners. If you go to the middle, that must be a shorter path, and that must be a shortest path. So you give the second affirmation is, okay, consider corner paths, the minimum length from 0,0 to Ij and the minimum length for Ij. Okay, this path has length Fij plus Gij. Does that make sense? Because Fij and Gij compute the minimum length path. So you look at the minimum length path, which goes from 0,0 to Ij, and the dynamic programming has computed this path. And it has length Fij. And the other dynamic programming has computed the other path from Ij to Mn, and it has Gij. So if you take these two paths and join them, they have a cost of Fij plus Gij. And from that, it follows that the shortest path has at most this, because we have one path which has length Fij and Gij. It's the path found by the two dynamic programmings joined. So you have a concrete example of a path. It costs Fij, Gij, plus Fij plus Gij. So that's an upper bound for the shortest path. That's what they say in the second affirmation. And on the third and the first one, they also say that it's a lower bound, and since the upper bound and the lower bound, it's the same. You have a shortest path. Okay, so that's that would be 690. Does that make sense? Hopefully. That's the problem is when you spell it all out, everything has roughly the same weight. Right? I think this one here is not so important because it's rather clear. Okay, they spell it out completely. That's good. You have the full proof over here. And I just said, okay, the shortest path consists of two shortest paths from here to there and there to there. And so if you take the shortest path here, you get a shortest path for the whole. Let's go back to the main thing. So takeaway from this slide is if we propagate to the middle and minimize over the whole the shortest path cost for each cell individually, we can identify the cell that goes through the middle. And that's a huge progress because I now have two sub-problems. Find, this would be maybe difficult to put that on an already crowded slide. One thing more, but let me try it. I know that cell over here. So you just have to find the shortest path from 0, 0 to that cell and the shortest path from that cell to 0, 0. And that is a sub-problem. It's the minimum sequence alignment of the suffix from going from j to m plus 1 and I to from j to m and I to n. And this is the minimum sequence alignment for the prefixes from 1 to j and 1 to I. So I have two smaller blocks and you do this again. The double dynamic programming effort of the question is just to retrieve the solution at a single row. Yes. Mm-hmm. We need to repeat it for the other rows to retrieve the whole solution. Yes. I have worked so hard just to get a single cell. It gets blacker all the time. This one. That's all I have. It's only this. Double programming effort to get the middle line, minimize over that stuff, get a single cell in the middle of the way. But now I have two subproblems. The subproblem one is find a shorter path from here to the middle, and the subproblem two is find a shorter path from here to the end. And this will be done by, you can feel it maybe, divide and conquer. Let's divide and conquer. We have divided the path roughly in the middle. Yeah, it's a combination of dynamic programming and divide and conquer. We use a double dynamic programming, if you want, forward and backward, just to find a single cell. And now we have divided the path in the middle. And now we make conquer. The conquer step is solve subproblem as one, find me the shortest path from 0, 0 to that cell we have found. And the other one is solve subproblem two, find me the shortest path from that cell they have found to the end. Okay, two dynamic programmings for finding the middle of the shortest path and two recursive calls in a overall divide and conquer algorithm that finds the two shortest paths, and then we're gonna join them, just concatenate them, the first and the second. And we know it must be the shortest path because we have identified that cell in the middle, okay? So yes, but the DC part runs for all rows in a subset. No, the DC part runs, yeah, at the end, yes, because I mean, the top level DC part is divide. That's finding this cell over here. And into subproblem one and subproblem two, and then solve subproblem one and two recursively. That's it. But now to solve that subproblem recursively, what you're going to do is, I really need more colors. Let me see if I can take, what's that? Kind of gray, yeah. To solve this subproblem here, you have to divide it in the middle, okay? And then propagate from here and propagate from there and find the middle element. And that would give you two other subproblems and so on. It's a divide and conquer tree. It goes all the way down. So to some, in some sense, yes, you run it on all rows on the subset, but not how you may think. It's not a single, simple loop which is going over all the rows. Okay. You could have, okay, that may be an idea. Yeah. Okay, you could think, let me, maybe you are thinking about something like that, okay. What I did is, I propagated here to the middle, and I propagated here to the middle, and that allows me in the middle here, identify a cell, the shortest path must go through that. And now you think, okay, I could do also this. Let me propagate only up to here, and from down up to here, and I identify another cell. And the shortest path must go through this. And so I'm making a scanning. I make it for all the n guys here. I propagate it to every possible line, right? And I find the cell in every possible line. And that gives you the solution. That could be an idea. Is that a good idea? Would that work? It seems to be a good idea, but it isn't. Okay. First of all, you could have the combination of all these cells does not necessarily give a shortest path, because you could have many shortest paths. So it could be like a zigzag over here. The solution is not what you want. But the second thing, if you don't believe that, okay, maybe. If there's a single shortest path, maybe that's okay. But it's even worse. If you do that, you're gonna have to propagate in time out of nm n times for each of the lines. Okay, so that would give you an algorithm which order n squared m. And that's not what I want. Yes. Okay. That would be a solution, but not the optimal one. I agree. But then you have the problem of zigzagging still. Okay. Because there could be many, many paths and the combination of all these cells. So it's possible to get in this line this cell. Okay. And you get in the next line this cell. That's possible. And then this is not a path anymore, because the dependencies are only like this. That also can happen. So it would cost more, that's for sure. But it also, if you want to maintain out of NM space, right? If not, if you start a whole matrix, you can do it only once and then you find all the cells. So you could play around with that. Compute A and R completely, whole matrix. And then you take the minimum in every row and you highlight it. And then you see that usually in there are several minima in every row. And what this minimization does, it gives you one of them. So you would need to guarantee that they maintain connectivity. That could possibly be done with some extra work if you do it. So it could be possible to do it, but not, you have to do some additional work and then possibly you could do it, but then it costs more. Okay. So it's well, actually it's the idea that works, but it's not the optimal idea. Okay. So the idea is really find the middle cell and recursively solve the subproblem. So we have actually this slide here, we have been discussing. Actually, I'm not sure if I have. Okay, now see, there's a slight lag. My internet has shortly complained, but now we are here, hopefully again. So the next slide is titled Inside here. That's what we have been doing. You can check them all in recursive computer shortest path. That's what we've been discussing on the previous slide. So just look me at the. Let me look at the overall algorithm. That would be, you see, I think we still have a lag because I don't see it on my second screen. Yeah, there it is. Okay, so the overall algorithm is this one. In the first step, you compute the A and the R recurrences that costs out of NM by propagating rows. So we have a space of only order of M. Just some image stuttering, we can hear you well. Okay, that's good. But I have some, well, the, going a little bit slower. There it comes. Okay. So usually I make a notation. So that's it. Yeah? First step, you compute the ASDRs, order LM and space order M. Then you select the J that minimizes this expression, AKJ plus RKJ. And that does this cell. That's an error here. The cell KJ is on the shortest path. That's what we have over here. That's what I've been discussing. And then you just, there's not much more to that, find recursively the shortest path from 0,0 to IK. That's also wrong here. That's that would be KJ. And from KJ to, I have been using N+1, actually. So, and then you join the shortest path. The fast one, the last one is join. And the recursive call just has smaller subproblems, prefixes and suffixes. Okay, so that would be 1, 2, 3, and 4. Hopefully the internet gets better at some point. And that's a complete algorithm. Okay, it's nothing more than that. The space cost of this is order of M, because the recursions are done one after the other, and nobody uses more than order of M space. That's easy to see. The fun part is, on the next slide, which is about time. And the time part is a bit more delicate. But it doesn't update. Okay. Maybe you'll get this in a second. It's strange. Let me look here. But I'm afraid of manipulating my internet here for the price of losing connection completely. So here's the slide. I think now it's there. So space cost, we said, is order of M. The time cost is more difficult. It depends on N and M. But it will be, and that's the main point here, it will be order of NM again. Okay, at the end. Actually, the recurrence is you have half of the lines up to some column J you don't know for one subproblem, and the other half of the lines for the remaining roughly N+2 - J columns for J you don't know. So this recurrence is different from the recurrences we have seen before in Divide and Conquer, because it has two arguments, first of all, and it has also a unknown index J. And then at the end, you have a, if you want, a merge cost or a combined cost of C prime NM. So you have two recursive calls with roughly half of the lines and the columns split in a way which is not clear. And the columns, the J, you don't know the J. So J columns go to one side and N+2 - J columns go to the other, but it's not completely sure what the J is, plus the merge cost. But this is order of NM at the end. So we get away, that's the main point here. The main point is we have reduced now the space to order of M, and time still is order of N times N. So we are, the constant in this O is a bit larger. You can see this in the proof, but I think I'm gonna skip the proof. It would not be hard, but I'm a bit afraid about the about the internet connection, because there would be still a couple of steps to make also where we're hitting to the end. So I make the general comment here. Space is down to order of M, that's easy to see. Time is still order of NM, with a larger constant costs a little bit more. I mean, you compute some of the dynamic programming occurrences several times, but it is still order of nm. So you get asymptotically away with the same time complexity, even if you make all these recursive calls, subproblems, 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 all down until you have the base case, which would be a single line or something, and then you stop. Does it make sense? Is that okay? Any questions at that point? Yes. The chat is working. Good. Do I have any code for this? No. It wouldn't be, well, I have been emphasizing many times, that's like, it's very, very simple, five lines of code for A, five lines of code for R. And then it would be just a minimization, another loop. So 11 lines plus two recursive calls later, plus two things that could be, it should do, I mean, if you sit down and look at the codes, we have already kind of half an hour, you should be able to code it. But it's really just like that, but I didn't code. We could do this. That would be okay if you want to, if we want to do that. In the practice sessions next week, then we could do that if you want. Have a look at this. So you maybe look at the slides. So let me go to the next slide, see if that works. On the next slide, there will be the proof of by substitution of that affirmation, because we don't have really techniques for solving recurrences with two arguments and this unknown J, but you can do it by substitution. The proof is here. I showed it in the video too. That's not highly insightful. Say, it's just you plug in the induction hypothesis, you make some manipulations, and then you see that it satisfies complexity. It's rather easy to do when you know what you want. So you have to guess. You have to guess that. And yes, okay. If there comes up anything to that, just to repeat that, what we've been saying, I don't know if someone came in, came out. So next Tuesday and Thursday, I will be available at 10:30 for a informal question answer session. Maybe code, whatever you want, everything. So it will be AMA, right? Ask me anything. AMA sessions. Next Tuesday and Thursday, on the material over here, and that's it. I have. Let's see if that slide. What I call a lightning app. Just okay. Last 2 minutes over here. I've been emphasizing it at the beginning, and I'm gonna emphasize it at the end. There is huge payoff to dynamic programming. It's extremely useful. I use it all the time, and I just picked up the next best paper which came to my mind. So here's a paper two years ago, mimetic algorithm for cost-oriented robotic assembly line balancing problem, some kind of weird stuff. But you basically have a set of tasks and a set of robots, and you want to execute the tasks, these tasks on these robots. You have to decide which robot to use at every several stations, and you every station takes a subset of tasks. The robots have some fixed costs. You can buy them as many as you want. The tasks have times, they have variable costs, and so on and so forth. Turns out, if the tasks have a fixed order, you can solve the problem you guess it's dynamic programming. And that's if you can spot these patterns, these problems, just to emphasize that it's not about content, really, these problems pop up all the time in practice. If the next slide comes up here in 10 minutes, no, there it is, the solution is that's taken from the paper. So the problem with the given specific order to execute a task emits a polynomial time algorithm in input size. And then you see in 21 a simple dynamic programming recurrence. And you see the argument, to see the correctness, blah, blah, blah. We talk about blah, blah, blah. And correctness follows from backward induction.
because it's a backward backward dynamic programming, I guess. No, it's a forward dynamic programming, so it's a backward induction. And in the last line, you see what we always say. Now, so to say the same thing in the papers, the table has order of t entries, and each entry time takes order of r times t to compute. That's the optimal sign that can be found in time order of t squared r. So that's how it comes out in practice. Give a short argument, and then you implement that. Okay. So extremely useful, pays off. Take that time to look into everything you can get about dynamic programming. Okay. So I'm gonna stop sharing over here right now. So that makes my internet maybe even a little bit better. You could please send us the answer of the second list in both methods. Both greedy says I had an exchange argument. Yes. So I've been saying at the beginning, I didn't put that up. Yes, this morning. So yes, greedy deadline for greedy has passed. So I put up the list with the solutions. You can read it. I will grade it this week. And the list for Divide and Conquer will come up also. I sent you an email about that at some point later. Okay. And so that's it. That finishes that part, the official part. So thanks for being there. We are still 14. We've been 18 in class, and you have been very 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 interested, very very patient also. That's and participating all the time. That's nice. So I hope it was useful, that part for you guys. Next week we see us in the informal sessions, and then Alvaro will take over at some point in time. Okay. So then I guess stop recording.